Iti sarvani bhutani,
iti sarvani bhutani,
madbhavena mahajute,
madbhavena mahajute,
sabhajayan manyamano,
sabhajayan manyamano,
jnana keva mashrita,
jnana keva mashrita.
It's the other verse up here, too. Yes. Brahmane bhukase stene,
Brahmane
Brahmanya ke spalingate,
Brahmanya ke spalingate,
Akure kurate chaiva,
Akure kurate chaiva,
Samadrit pandito vata,
Samadrit pandito vata,
Iti,
in this way,
Sarvani,
Sarvani,
to all,
Bhutani,
living beings, Madhavena, with the sense of my presence, Mahajute, O greatly effulgent Uddhava, Sabhajan,
giving respect,
Manyamana,
so considering,
Jnanam,
knowledge,
Kevalam,
transcendent.
Ashrita,
Ashrita,
taking shelter of
Brahmane,
in the Brahmana, Pukkase, in the outcasts of the Pukkasa
tribe,
Stene,
in the thief,
Brahmanye,
in
the man who respects Brahminical culture. Arke, in the sun. Spalingate, in the spark of the fire. Akure, in the gentle. Krurake,
in
the cruel.
Cha,
also.
Eva,
indeed.
Samadrik,
having equal vision.
Pandita,
a learned scholar,
Mata,
is considered. Translation. O brilliant Uddhava, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, and who, by taking shelter of this divine knowledge, offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. Such a man sees equally the Brahmana and the outcast, the thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture, the sun and the tiny sparks of fire, the gentle and the cruel. Purport. A series of opposites is set forth here, namely the high-class Brahmana and the low-class aborigine, the thief who steals from respectable persons, and the respecter of a noble culture who gives charity to Brahmanas, the all-powerful sun and insignificant spark, and finally, the kind and the cruel. Ordinarily, the ability to distinguish between such opposite qualities, qualifies one as intelligent. How then can the Lord state that by ignoring such obvious differences establishes one as a wise man? The answer given by the words Madhavena, a wise person sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead within everything. Therefore, although externally perceiving and dealing with the varieties of material situations, a wise man is more impressed by and concerned with the overwhelming unity of all existence, which is based on the presence of the Supreme Lord within everything. As explained here, a truly wise person is not limited to superficial material discrimination. Om Gana Chimanandasya Gana Jana Shakaya Chakshun Vidhamina Tadzmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Sri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This verse spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. Uddhava is addressed as Mahajyoti, greatly effulgent. It is natural that when sinful activities stop and the devotee reconnects to Krishna, effulgence manifests. Often, onlookers comment when meeting devotees. There's some kind of glow around them when they see devotees in the Harinam party. Or even devotees can be wearing regular clothes and people still can pick out a devotee. They detect something. They see something. Sinful activities make us dull. They destroy our health. They destroy our countenance. They destroy our intelligence. And they destroy our spiritual consciousness. We need a strong understanding of the effects of sinful life. Otherwise, we may think we are just abstaining from the sinful activities because it's part of a religious belief. We should understand thoroughly the science of action. Certain activities are negative, and certain activities are positive. Negative activities drag you away from Krishna. Positive activities bring you toward Krishna. Ultimately, it's all about love. Just look at any ordinary relationship. The participants in that relationship will acknowledge that anything that detracts from the relationship is bad, and anything that enhances the relationship is good. So Krishna is the supreme person, Lila Purushottam. He's a supreme person with pastimes, leelas, which come about not because Krishna has any need or he's forced, but they simply come about by his own sweet will. Our activities, as you know, in this material world are forced by biology, by hormones, by the modes of material nature, by the mind which enslaves us, by social pressure, family pressure. Our activities are forced. Therefore, of course, we can't have leela, we can't have pastimes in that condition. Still, as Lord Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita, ahankara vimudatma, being super foolish, we have the pride to think that we are the activators, we are the creators, we are the initiators, we set things into motion. When actually we're acting under the force of the modes of material nature, which just ravage us like the floodwaters ravaging Queensland. Can you imagine someone in Queensland with the floodwaters swiftly going here and there, knocking down houses, and one is saying, I am independent. No, in a moment like that, people acknowledge their extreme dependence. So similarly, we are in the ocean of material existence being dragged here and there. But we're so quick to find an opportunity in which we can think we are the independent, we are the initiators, we set things into motion, and then we take some pride. The knowledge that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita is very liberating. That what you think is your independent choice actually is dictated by the modes of material nature. You get the blame, even though the modes of original nature are dictating to you, because because you put yourself under the control of a Jill agent. You jumped into the raging flood waters, so therefore you get the blame for what happens, what the flood waters do. Even though what the flood waters do is beyond your control, still you get the blame. Think about it. What kind of system is that? As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Karyam Karana Karchate, Hetu Prakriti Uchate, Purusha Sukha Jugana. The living entity gets all the credit and blame. The so called credit of material existence is actually blame. So you're the cause of your own happiness and distress, even though the floodwaters are carrying you everywhere. Why? Because you jumped in. So Krishna fingers the culprit. Karna, karna, karta. The culprit is material nature. What are you doing associating with material nature? As I've often, someone is hungry for a relationship, and so they entertain a certain possibility and start to, start to do all the things to further that relationship. And even though others point out it's not in your best interest, so once the spell takes over, very difficult to resist. Regardless of that spell, you get the blame because you jumped in. You put yourself in a situation in which the spell covered you over. Even though the spell, so to speak, does its own thing. The spell of material nature acts upon living entities and takes things beyond what they would normally do with a cool head. We were speaking this weekend about happiness and how our senses are so imperfect in our pursuit of happiness. And we brought up one technical term that scientists of happiness have discovered. Empathy gap. They, through their research, have found something that has already been there in Bhagavad Gita since time immemorial. That when you are in a cool-headed state of rationality, logic, clear-headed thinking, as clear as you can be in material existence, amidst the three modes of material nature. Anyway, when you're in what is conventionally known as a cool-headed state, when logic and reason, foresight predominate, you cannot accurately predict how you will respond when you're in a hot-headed state. That means a state dominated by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, illusion, the six highway robbers, the six muggers. You can't predict how you're going to act. So therefore, people are often surprised when they do things that in a more peaceful state of mind, they would never do. And they're always surprised. Wow, why did I do that? I can't believe it. In fact, social scientists point out that the difference between you when you're in your cool-headed state of mind, so-called, actually a devotee sees all material cool-headed states as actually high-headed, but it's another thing. When you're in your so-called cool-headed state of mind, you are as different from you in the hot state of mind as you are from another person. Think about it. In fact, you're even more different. So you're thinking, I know me. I may have my excesses and I may have my moments when I get bewildered, but that's just all part of me. No. No, in the sense that the difference between you and another person is less than the difference between you when you're in your cool state of mind and your hot state of mind. In other words, when the hot state of mind takes over us, we just become another entity. Even though we are tossed about by the raging floodwaters of samsara, the ocean of material existence. We get the blame. What are you doing in material existence? So the devotee is trained to see the cause, the karana. The cause is not really this event or that event or this person or that person. The cause is our association, guna sangha, with material nature. The bhakti process is meant to transform that association, to put you in contact once again with the spiritual energy via devotional service, so that you can begin once again to function normally, to begin to think, what gives Krishna pleasure and how? In this verse, Krishna is telling Uddhava, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, and who by taking shelter of this divine knowledge offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. So there's no question of love until we can acknowledge the presence of the Lord in everyone's heart. It's not simply a mental adjustment. All right, God is within you, God is within you. And you, if you actually understand that the super soul is present in everyone's heart, you will treat every person in such a way as to maximize their development of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's just all theory, half-baked notions. I respect the God within you. I respect the God within you. All right, all right. That's like, what do you call it here, kinder? Now what? You have to progress further. You have to begin your formal education, which means how to treat everyone in such a way that their Krishna consciousness becomes maximized, because indeed they are carriers of the Lord. Without this vision, it's impossible for love. How can we rip someone out of the cosmic fabric, materially speaking, rip them out of their connection to Krishna, spiritually speaking, and then say, okay, you are it for me, and I am it for you? This is insanity. How can that be real love? Love means to honor and revere someone's connection to Krishna and enhance that connection to Krishna. That is real love. Otherwise, the love is so selfish. Once again, you rip someone out of their actual context of existence. And then you pronounce, I shall love you. This is doing the person a great disservice, and simply the clouds of illusion increase. So bhakti is all about love, but it's educating us how to love truly and genuinely. We can err in two ways. We can see everyone as all one, or we can see everyone as all different. Both are mistakes. Everyone is all one because they are part of Krishna, and Krishna is in everyone's heart. But then again, everyone is different because they have individuality. They have material individuality, which is not very substantial. Still, under the influence of Maya, it exists. And they have spiritual individuality, which is eternal and very significant. Impersonalists, due to frustration in living in this world, make a very convenient adaptation. Everything is one. All the varieties are actually false. But they never recognize who is the owner of the oneness. Even if you want to say everything is one, in the complete sense, who is the owner? You see, by their saying everything is one, by being
exclusively monistic, they kick out the concept that there's a supreme proprietor. Very clever, isn't it? Like you go to the CBD in Melbourne and pronounce, everything is one. The banks, the clothing shops, the CD shops, it's all one. Meaning it, there's no proprietor. Very clever, isn't it? Because according to impersonalism, you can't acknowledge that there's a proprietor, because that's a difference. That's a violation of the oneness. We say everything is one in that everything belongs to Krishna. Therefore, there can be genuine love. Lord Chaitanya demonstrated the fallacy of Mayavad conceptions when his mother, when Lord Chaitanya was a little boy, he was playing with his friends, and his mother brought him a plate of sweets. Mother Sachimata was concerned. Let him eat something. So she gave Lord Chaitanya the plate of sweets, and then she went away. And what did Lord Chaitanya do as a little boy? Little Nimai. He sort of hid himself and started eating dirt. Somehow or other, his mother, Sachimata, saw him. And she came running. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you eating dirt for? And baby Nimai began to cry. Don't be angry, mother. Don't be angry with me. This plate of sweets, the sweets, they're dirt. And here is dirt. So, why are you angry at me? The sweets are simply transformations of dirt. And here we have dirt. So, I'm eating the dirt. What is the problem? Sachimata was astonished. How has my boy, my little baby, become overwhelmed by Mayavad philosophy? She was a housewife, but she could understand. Where does he get these notions from? In other words, Lord Chaitanya, baby Nimai, was presenting the position that varieties, differences have no meaning. Ultimately, all the differences are false. Brahma Satya Jagadmitya. Brahman is the only thing that's real, and the material world is false. So therefore, since the material world is false, what's the difference between eating dirt and eating sandesh? People talk like that, maybe, but they can't act like that. And that's what Mother Yashoda pointed out. Excuse me. That's what Sachimata pointed out to baby Nimai. Who acts like that? If you eat dirt, the body becomes sick. If you eat food, even though the food comes from the dirt, your body is nourished. But if you just say, the body is dirt, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, the food is dirt, so everything is dirt, I'll just eat dirt. You're violating the system. The system for existence means to recognize differences as essential, just like unity is essential. Sachimata also explained that a clay pot is actually just dirt. But if you want to carry water, if you just get a handful of dirt and pour the water on it, your mission will not be successful. The dirt needs to be baked in the form of a clay pot. So in this way, Sachimata was explaining to her son that there are differences. Everything is not absolutely monistic. And varieties are not false. Variety is an inbuilt factor in all of existence. The spiritual varieties are eternal. So Lord Chaitanya, baby Nimai, he thanked his mother. Oh, mother, why haven't you explained this to me before? How did I get bewildered? Thank you for explaining to me this point. He said, from now on, I promise you, mother, I will not eat dirt. I will only suck your breast milk. Baby Nimai knows how to be the most affectionate baby. So he told that to his mother, and then he sat on her lap to be nursed. So in this way, we see that even an apparently simple housewife like Shachimata could easily handle Mayavad philosophy by pointing out that differences have a purpose. Everything is not false. In our recognizing of differences, we have to distinguish between spiritual difference and material difference. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the true yogi sees everyone as equal, regardless of their happiness and distress. The happiness and distress coming in material life is external. Therefore, the true yogi doesn't become envious. The true yogi understands that just like people have different material bodies, they also have differing amounts of happiness and distress in their life. Both the material bodies and the amount of happiness and distress, both are external. The soul is equal in all circumstances. But even though the soul is equal in all circumstances, in order to love effectively on behalf of Krishna, you have to acknowledge these temporary material differences and treat the conditioned soul in such a way that the conditioned soul can make spiritual advancement. That means in administering the process of bhakti, we have to acknowledge that bodies and minds are different and expertly give the medicine. Even though, of course, those material differences are temporary. They're external to the spirit soul. The art of love means to learn how to inspire everyone, regardless of their material conditioning and circumstances, in coming closer to Krishna. That art may take a long time to develop, but it's the only way to go. Why should we delay it, saying, oh, it's too deep for now? If we want to be genuine and authentic, then we should learn the art, make progress in the art of acting towards someone in such a way that their bhakti increases. That is real love. One has to make an effort to start that somewhere, sometime. Just like you see a little child starts to walk. You have to begin your lifetime somewhere. Similarly, you have to begin your quest for real love somewhere, at some time. Why not now? Who wants to be a pretender, a hypocrite, a false person? Well, that's what happens when we try to love without taking into account Krishna. Once again, just see yourself ripping someone out of the cosmic fabric. You're mine. And what to speak of ripping them out of their connection to Krishna. Krishna, just step aside for a while. I got something to do with this person. We'll get back to you, Krishna. We've just got a few things we need to work out here on. Don't worry, we will get back to you and we'll offer you some prayers. Just be cool. Right now we have some serious business to do here. Because of that tendency, so much pain comes into our life and we can't recognize where the pain comes from. I thought it was just going to be you and me in a world of our own. And everything was going to work out. How can everything work out separate from Krishna's interest? So the bhakti process teaches you how to genuinely love. This is the kitchen religion. This is the love religion. But one has to learn how to genuinely love. Otherwise, the heart will never be satisfied. We'll always be plagued by this sense of incompleteness in our relationships. I don't know what it is, but you know, there's just something missing. It's just not the same anymore. This will always happen because material relationships are under the influence of time. They're saturated by time. But no one fingers the real enemy, time. Instead, you get married, you get mad at the other person. You've changed. You're not like you used to be. Why don't you get angry at time? What has time done? As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi, I'm time. I come and take everything away. I destroy everything. But that's just what Bhagavad Gita says. Meanwhile, it's going to be me and you, and it's all going to work out. Krishna consciousness is essential for love. And we can't live without love. Everyone knows that. Love means to act towards someone so that their Krishna consciousness increases. Then you'll be peaceful and fulfilled. Otherwise, as long as we treat someone like they're separate from Krishna, how can we be for real? And how can that person be for real to us? So, we have the most important contribution to make to the world of love. First of all, the bhakti shastras define what love is. Love means to please Krishna's senses. Lust means to think about pleasing your own senses. That means even in our greatest material moments, in which we think we have so much empathy and love for someone, because we're seeing them as separate from Krishna, that means we're not all the time acting in a way that will enhance that person's love of Krishna. We're lusting. We're not loving. Lust has to arise when you see someone as separate from Krishna. So what Krishna is telling Uddhava here is to always see everyone and everything as Krishna's property. If you get a job as a property manager, it's your task on behalf of the owner of the property to take care of the property and even try to increase its value. Then you're known as a very good property manager. So Krishna has given us this opportunity to be property managers on his behalf by acting toward other living entities so their bhakti increases. That's the real fun in life. That's the real pleasure, because it's giving Krishna pleasure. So seeing the Lord as present in all living entities is not just something theoretical. If you're actually seeing, you understand this person is part of Krishna. Krishna is present in this person. How can I treat this person so the person will increase their bhakti? That is the reality. That is real love. Krishna will empower us in this way, on this path of genuine love. And then we'll feel the completeness that we've been missing. You see so many people running around in material existence. I tried to love, but just it didn't work out. Something was missing. There wasn't that sense of fullness that I was looking for. So either they continue madly pursuing this relationship, that relationship, or they become very cynical while pursuing relationship after relationship. Well, anyway, look, there's no real love in this world, so you just got to do the best you can with someone. They become desensitized. These days, I've even heard members, couples telling each other, look, let's live together and pretend we love each other. That's as best as it gets in this world. What is the solution to all this madness? Krishna is teaching Uddhava how to see. That's an essential part of bhakti. To see the supreme proprietor. To see everything as the property of Krishna. And to enhance the value. This is the complete love that you're looking for. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj was asking about how from so many frustrated relationships they can become desensitized.
Yeah.
So sometimes we bring this mood, I mean, towards Krishna.
And the devotees, yes. Often when we take up the path of bhakti, we're so banged up and so kicked around and disappointed that we think Krishna consciousness is an excuse to just be hard-shelled. To have a hard shell around you like a rhinoceros. And we think that will be for Krishna's pleasure. How do you think life in the devotional community will be if you have like a bunch of rhinoceroses with thick skins running around? Not very attractive. But you know, when you first take a bhakti, you've been banged up so many times, you're desensitized. I don't want to care about anything. I don't want to care about anyone. I'm just going to chant Hare Krishna and take prasad and leave me alone. You growl at other devotees. Haven't I done enough service? Gradually, though, the purification process starts to make our hearts soft. And that's what's attractive about devotees, soft-heartedness. But it's understandable after countless experiences in material existence, we're going to be desensitized and we become hard-hearted. Because we've been used so many times and we have used others so many times. Particularly the all-pervasive phenomenon of illicit sex actually makes the heart hard. They lust and then they become angry and hard-hearted because their lust is never satisfied. I was explaining at our festival in New Zealand how I once did a study in Wellington, the capital city. And I was watching, I was in like a camper van, and on a Friday evening I was watching everyone come home from work because it's big offices there, it's the capital. And I saw everyone with such an apparently happy look on their faces. Thank God it's Friday. They had that look on their face. If there's a God, thank Him, it's Friday. And they're like, relief. Like, wow, the weekend. We're really going to get into it. I looked at the liquor stores, long lines at the liquor stores. I'm sure Australia is different, you know. And people just had an air of excitement about them. You know, Wellington's kind of a cosmopolitan city. It's known as the party capital of New Zealand. So everyone's Friday night party, cafe scene. And if you're not possessing the skillful knowledge that a devotee possesses, you could become bewildered. Well, actually, these people do look happy. There's kind of a bubbly sense of excitement on a Friday evening. You do Harinam here on a Friday evening, is that it? So I'm sure you've seen it in the Swanson Street area. You could be fooled by that. Then I went to that same spot on Monday morning. Because everyone would be walking that way to go to their offices. And I saw and looked at the faces. That was like a funeral. The men all had this washed out look on their faces and looked like they were totally drained. We won't go into why. And the women were looking angry and defiant. I could understand the men's look, you know, that just absorb themselves in sense gratification, lusting on the weekend, any way they could, and therefore all their vitality and whatever little intelligence they had is completely drained, and they're like lifeless corpses because they don't understand that that illicit activity destroys their health, destroys their mind. Every medical system in the world acknowledges this except the Western medical system. It's there in Ayurveda. It's there in Chinese medicine. It'll be there in indigenous forms of medicine, not Western medicine. So, that's the story of the men. The women, I couldn't understand. So I asked some of our lady devotees, why do the women look so defiant and angry on a Monday morning? While the men look so... I know the men, they're looking so drained and spaced out. But the women just... as they're walking to the office. So the lady devotees explained to me that the women are angry because they played the game on the weekend. They've given themselves as sense objects, but they didn't get what they're looking for. They didn't get the real love and affection they're looking for. Therefore, they're so angry. I played the game, and what did I get? My heart wasn't touched. I couldn't find that completeness I was looking for. So the lady devotees explained to me that's what the look means. I've thrown myself into the furnace, played the game. According to what people say, you're supposed to be happy and enlivened, and instead I just feel exploited and used. I tried to exploit and abuse, but I'm not happy. I'm miserable. What's the point of this world? But anyway, it's time to go to work. It's a tragedy. This knowledge of how to love in perfection is desperately needed because we can't get rid of our loving propensity. We have to love. The Vibhakti process means how to learn to love. According to your ashram situation, it's all about love. No matter what ashram you're in, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, nyas, you have to learn how to love because you're a part of Krishna, and Krishna is the supreme lover. So you have a loving propensity. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to utilize it? Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, before the point that we are plagued by sense of incompleteness, you know that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, but we sometimes fail to apply that knowledge.
How do you get over failing to apply the knowledge? Hear the knowledge all the time, associate with those who are applying the knowledge, and you won't forget. That tendency to want to enjoy separately from Krishna has been with us since time immemorial, body after body. And so we have to expect that it's going to take some time to deal with it. Therefore, choose your association, choose your circumstances carefully. Often devotees come to me and say, well, I can either go here or go there, live here or live there, take this job or go to this school. So then I ask them, what is the best situation for your bhakti? That's how you decide. And then they often say, Jai Maharaj, but you see, there are other considerations. I said, I know there are other considerations. There are always other considerations, but you have to understand what is the number one priority. And let your life be guided by the number one priority. Otherwise, how can love of Krishna develop if you always put Krishna in second, third, fourth place? Impersonalism makes us think, anyway, we all know Krishna can take care of himself. We have to take care of ourselves. Krishna's Atmaram, self-satisfied. Meanwhile, we've got to struggle to get what we need. So Krishna, he should understand that and just stay on the altar instead of our life.
This is neophyte consciousness. The way you start to become advanced is to always consider your bhakti your number one priority and mold your life around that principle. All right. Last question. This is a good one. Are you sure? Okay. Who's sure they have it's the last question. Now the ladies, they have neither chance. Yes.
Maybe not a good one, but try. You said that we're not independent, and Krishna's a doer, of course. We understand that most of the time.
Right.
But that even our spiritual life is an intact. But we choose to jump into the floodwaters, in this case. Rather than, we choose to jump into
the choice is in your hands. Once you make your choice, the rest is history, more or less. Alright, so you can choose, you're going to get a red dress instead of a purple dress. But is that really choice? When you look at the overall picture of the big choice, should I jump into the spiritual energy or the material energy? That's the real use of your independence. Everything else is just small stuff, fine print. But we make a big deal out of the fine print, right? I got a blue jumper instead of a red jumper. I just see my choice power. This is Western civilization. I mean, such a big deal out of that. I chose to live in Melbourne instead of Sydney. Just see. But from the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita, that's just small stuff. You're missing the real choice. You chose to associate with the material energy instead of the spiritual energy. So basically, once you choose the energy to associate with, the rest is just history. It's inconsequential. So you do have independence. But because you're tiny, once you make the choice, you're swept away, either by the spiritual floodwaters or the material floodwaters. All right? Thank you very much.